So, Jason, The Sure Thing is our pick today.
It is.
My first comment about The Sure Thing is that it is impossible to find. It is not available for streaming or purchasing online.
Wow.
So I went into a bit of a panic mode over the weekend as I could not find this movie.
I have a theory. Also, speaking of Slack, our friend Casey had a file in the Slack of this movie. Shh.
Did he? I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you could. It's available digitally in the secret Slack channel about this movie. I have a theory about it, which is that the music in it has made it difficult it's available. Like, the DVD is a Shout Factory DVD, and a lot of the Shout Factory stuff, it's higher priced than, it's like, it lists at $25, it's higher priced, and they do that because they're the main company doesn't want to release it because it's going to be too much to get the music rights. And then Shout Factory basically says, okay, we will clear all the music rights and release it at a higher price and a lower volume for the people who really want to see it. Because the soundtrack to The Sure Thing is staggering. In fact, I think it seems much more impressive now as a representative of the 80s than it did at the time. It feels like songs selected for a movie we'd make today set in the 80s. Like, well, we got to have a song by these people, and that song is very 80s and all of that. But it's just the songs they picked for this movie. By the way, the musical supervisor I looked up while I was watching it for this movie is also the musical supervisor for Real Genius. So it's the same person picking the songs for both, which also made me laugh. But it's a very 80s soundtrack, and my guess is that the music rights are probably very expensive, and that may be why it's not available streaming.
That is a good theory. I like that theory. There is a lot of music throughout this. When the movie opens, it opens very 80s. It has a very 80s song and has like this beautiful like 80s font, right? It's all like fluorescent,
yes. Oh, yes.
Like streaking across the screen, right?
Uh-huh.
If you could find the movie, right?
Yeah. did you end up seeing the movie, Mike?
Yes, luckily I did. It stumbled upon me somehow.
I just want to mention about the music. Rod Stewart, Huey Lewis in the News, Sammy Hagar, Quiet Riot, John Waite, Jay Giles Band, The Eagles, Eagles, The Cars, Wang Chung, Lionel Richie, and Peter Wolf. So it is and it's Lights Out by Peter Wolf. So it is a super uber 80s kind of soundtrack. But I could also see why that might be very expensive. If they had to relicense all that music for streaming and home video.
So the only thing that I knew about this movie, or believe that I knew about this movie, is that you referred to it last week as a sex comedy. So my question before going into this was, is this Real Genius or is this American Pie? I will find out.
And I think the reality is it is like some of the other movies that we've watched, including Say Anything. It is a movie that wants you to think that it's a horny teen sex comedy sort of movie when it's not.
Yes, that we'll get to this a little bit later on. Let's put a pin in that for now.
But this one tries harder than Say Anything does, right? Say Anything doesn't really, they have the one party scene, but Say Anything really doesn't get too far down the road, where Sure Thing spends a good 25 minutes really wanting you to think that this is all about a couple of guys who want to get laid.
Yeah, and the title,
you realize,
right? So, The Sure Thing is the sure thing of the person, the girl who is a sure thing, like that we're going to get our main character, John Cusack, who plays a character called Gib, Walter Gibson, is going to go to his friend's college in California because there is this girl there who is a sure thing for him. Like
his friend Anthony Edwards from ER and Top Gun, very young as his friend, the dude in going to college in California. And Nicolette Sheridan, who went on to be on like Knots Landing, and she did a whole bunch of other things. And her role is credited in the credits as the Sure Thing.
That is
who she is. She never has a name. She's blonde and beautiful and sits out on the beach and appears in the various fantasy sequences of John Cusack's Gib.
But before we even finish the credits, there was something that I noticed that really made me smile. Executive producer, Henry Winkler.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
So It's a funny thing about what Henry Winkler did sort of post Fonz, which was get into producing, and he produced a bunch of movies that would surprise you, and TV series. I believe he was one of the producers on MacGyver, the TV series as well. But he did this film, and there was another big movie that he's listed as a producer on. God, what is it? Anyway, yeah, he had a whole or did he direct? He also directed. He directed some movies and he produced some movies. It was very much his, okay, I've been a sitcom star on Happy Days and now I want to do some other things. And so he produced and directed a bunch of stuff. So he is listed as one of the executive producers on The Sure Thing. I have no idea.
Oh, and I'm looking at his IMDb page right now. There's a ton of stuff. Like, I was thinking, oh, I'll just go and find out what that thing was. I will be here all day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's crazy, the stuff that he's produced. So I think that's part of the story, is that he did a whole bunch of sort of post Fonz things. But yeah, he's listed as an executive producer on Sure Thing.
So I like that it kind of it starts off with Gibb.
We should say this is directed by Rob Reiner, who we've already seen. This is Spinal Tap and The Princess Bride from, and then stars John Cusack, who we've already seen with Say Anything.
So it starts off, Cusack is giving his chat up line to a girl, and it's about space. And I wondered if this was potential for why you love this movie, is that he uses space as a pickup line.
He's so bad at it.
It doesn't work.
Consider the universe. He says, with his high voice, he's 19 in this movie.
He's very young in this movie.
4 years younger than, this is 4 years before Say Anything, and his voice hasn't dropped, basically, yet.
And I like that the movie's set up really well. Like, it begins at the ending for these two friends who've just graduated high school and they're about to go off to college. Like, that's, I really like that as the way that the movie begins, because it just puts a pin in where these people are in their lives. They don't do it in a ham-fisted way. They don't do it with a lot of exposition. It's just a couple of minutes and then they move on to the rest of the movie. And I think it sets it up really nicely.
Did you notice something we talked about when we talked about Say Anything was that that's a movie entirely set in a period which we rarely see in a film, which is the summer after high school and before college.
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed when this movie starts in the same place, which is graduation night, and scene two skips all the way to college. And I thought, wow, Say Anything just happened in between those two scenes, because this movie's got to, it's time to move on. The point is shorthand. They're in high school. It's all the expectations of going off to college. There's that funny line where Anthony Edwards is trying to give him a pep talk about how he's going to be more lucky with the ladies in college. He says, forget about these high school girls. Pretty soon they'll all be college girls. And he says, but it's the same girls. They just go to college. And he says, no. They'll be college girls. Girls, then this dream that is nonsensical about it.
Yep.
It's just so naive and funny and dumb. And then we cut to he's at an unspecified Northeastern university.
So he's taking English, and I really love his lecturer.
Oh yeah,
she is such a fantastic character. She's so full of life and fun. And I love that, like, you know, she wants them to express themselves more in their writing. And she says stuff like, sleep when you want to, not when you think you must. Make love in a hammock. Like, it's like she's just saying all this stuff, like just prancing around the room.
She's Swedish, so she's got this accent. So you're like, she's this vaguely European dynamic.
Spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. I really like that a lot. I also love the swimming pool monologue, right? So at this point, Gibb has set his sights on Amanda. That is who he is really interested in, and he's trying to get her to go on a date with him. And she is going for a swim in a pool, and she's doing lengths, and he's just walking up and down the pool in increasing desperation absolute melodrama of why she should give him a shot and how it would, like, completely end his life. And then he jumps into the pool and is like, would you save a drowning man? Like, it's all, I really like that bit.
She swims past him. It's Allison, by the way.
Allison, sorry.
You got bad handwriting there, but we knew that.
I was trying to do it from memory. Didn't do a very good job.
Yeah. So yeah, he follows her. It's sweet. He fancies himself, I think, as a lot of, is this in reality or not? But it's certainly in movies that a lot of teenage, young men fancy themselves, powerful pickup artist type people where they're like, oh, I can get the ladies to go out with me. I've got a line. You know, he's working on his lines and stuff like that. You got to get some new material. And then with her, he has this whole scheme, which is that he's going to get her to help him with his studying, his paper, because he's got to rewrite this paper that he wrote about not burning the roof of your mouth when you eat pizza. That is what his paper is about, by the way. And and the moment, so she finally agrees, and the moment that they sit down to work on the paper, seemingly he's like, let's get some air, let's get out of here. It is the thinnest tissue paper sham. It is just so, it made me laugh, because it's like he doesn't even go through the motions of, like, we don't see that they've been working on it. Now that they're leaving after the study session, he's going to ask her out. He can't wait. He immediately is like, no, let's blow this off and actually go out on a date, which I didn't ask you on, but now I'm going to ask you on.
I like that. Amazing. When she finally agrees to go on a date with him, they, like, you know, they agree on a time and stuff, and Allison goes to walk out of the door. And Gib says, where? Like, where shall I meet you? Like, this is one of my biggest pet peeves in movies, when people set up dates and never arrange a location or a time.
Yeah, 2 o'clock. Or they'll be like, yeah, I'll pick you up for lunch. All right. What?
Like, where are you? Do you know where she lives? Like, I like that they just put that time in there. Like, it really annoys me when people leave that out in movies. It's like just this ambiguous time and or location of where this date will occur.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's kind of psyching himself up, like, in his dorm room, and I really like the scene where his friend is Jimbo, is trying to, like, give him the lines to use for the ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, this, like, real sensitive line. And
I feel
like
we've got a connection.
Stroking his arm and that sort of stuff as he's giving him the full patter, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Which he uses many times throughout this movie on various ladies, or at least tries to.
Indeed. And we also, at some point in here, he also gets the letter from his friend who's at you know, UCLA or something like that. He's in college in Southern California, telling him about how amazing it is out there while it's just the brutal winter, and it's getting on toward Christmas, and it's the brutal cold has come to the Northeast, and his pal is just in a like a parody of almost of what you'd expect, because that's how I always viewed it, is that even though he goes there and it actually is this way, but it is like the dream Southern California college thing, which is, we don't really go to school and we hang out on the beach, and there's a beach house and there's a pool and the beach is over there, and there are girls in bikinis, and we're all just partying and drinking beer, and that's all we do all the time at Southern California University. Which is not University of Southern California. It's slightly less academic. Anyway.
And they have a phone call, don't they? Which I really like. So his friend, what was his friend's name?
Lance.
They're having a phone call, and like Gib is like freezing in a corridor, and Lance is like walking outside by a pool in the sun, and he's got a Hawaiian shirt on, and his girl's playing volleyball, and it's like it's just fantastic to just watch this, like, night and day. It's like, hey, it's amazing here, and he's like his friends has a lady in his room, and there's various sounds coming from the room, so he's just like completely shut out in this cold corridor listening to his friend being like, come on, man, it's a sure thing over here, get your way to California. So they start the journey to California, right? And he goes to like this board, and it's like some ride. Like, what is that about?
Okay,
like,
so Anthony Edwards tells him, come to California. She's got to go on her semester at sea on December 22nd or whatever, which is hilarious because that's exactly when you would start the semester at sea, is right before Christmas time. That's not a thing. But anyway, that's the idea here, is you got to get to see her before she goes off and leaves, because she's a sure thing. She was in a parochial school or something. She is built up as this basically like, she's beautiful and will have sex with you, so come to California, and you know, also it's warm here, but you got to get here by a certain date, and it's about to be the Christmas break. So he goes to the rideshare board, which, Mike, this was a thing, that there would be a place that you could go if you were, they had this when I was in college, I never used it, but if you were driving to, I went to school in San Diego, Southern California University, we didn't have the swimming pool and the girls playing volleyball in the swimming pool, I have to say, as somebody who went to a Southern California University. But they would have the board, and it would have like driving to LA, you know, and you would people would like sign up to go with them and you drop them off. And we actually had that when we went to LA for Thanksgiving one year from up here. My my wife's sister was at Berkeley and she had a friend, and it was the, like, you know, it was the same idea. It's like we dropped her off along the way because she lived in the northern part of LA. So we kind of went out of our way a little, dropped her off, and then continued on. And back in the day before the internet, especially, that was sort of how you did it, is you pinned these messages up and they did like rideshare, and you'd share, you know, you'd buy the gas or whatever. And so everybody would win, and you that was how people got. Maybe not across the country. I don't know. That's kind of extreme, but it would totally, that the ride sharing thing would happen.
So they do that, right? They go on a rideshare, and the funny thing is that when Gib gets in the car, Allison is there, right?
Yeah, she is also taking this rideshare in the car that is being driven by a very young Tim Robbins.
Yep, and him, Tim Robbins and his lady are singing show tunes. They are a lovely, yeah, wholesome couple, and the whole time Allison and Gib are just at each other's throats because, you know, they've Gib tried to get fresh, I guess, with Allison, and she wasn't having none of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that they don't really like each other so much,
but they're wacky and mismatched in the back of this car with the husband and wife in the front, who are super perky and don't have kids of their own. So they're expecting this is going to be a really fun road trip with the college kids, and the college kids are silent and staring daggers at each other, and there's a lot of funny contrast, and they sing the show tunes, and they're totally bringing down the happy couple.
And then it gets to the point where they get thrown out onto the road and they have to make their own way, right? Like Tim Robbins has just had enough and he just chucks them out of the car. So they begin the process.
Well, you remember the reason why. Ultimately, he goads Gib after having a thing where we hear about that she's got this boyfriend, Jason, sounds like a terrible guy, in L.A., that they are sharing the hotel room, and she's gonna says I've got a schedule. It's very proto When Harry Met Sally in some ways. Like she's super uptight and he's not, and so she's like, I've got a schedule. You'll sleep on the bed in alternating nights, and I'll sleep on the floor, and we'll alternate. But tonight you're on the floor, and he gets really frustrated with that. And he needles her in the car the next day and says, "Come on, you got to do something spontaneous." And she says, "I like to do things that are spontaneous when it's been planned out," or whatever she says. It's very funny. And then he finally basically gets her to lift her shirt up and show her boobs to the an oncoming bit of traffic, and this outrages Tim Robbins and his wife, and they throw him out of the car.
Well,
in the
because
middle of
they
nowhere.
Get pulled over by the police, and he gets a ticket, yeah. Right? And
oh, so- that's true. That's true. Cut to he's being written up for indecent exposure and reckless driving and whatever else, for things that would not be his fault, but he's the driver of the car, I guess. And at that point, they just leave them. They leave them by the side of the road in a place that looks suspiciously like where I grew up. It's like it's very clearly the foothills of Northern California, which is where they shot a lot of this movie. But it's supposedly out in the middle of the United States somewhere.
So because I knew where you grew up and that kind of thing, right? Gib and Allison go hitchhiking at this point. So have you ever hitchhiked?
No.
Okay. It seems horrific to me as a thing,
yeah,
to do.
Yeah.
Like, it seems horrible.
I don't like meeting people, Mike, and hitchhiking is meeting people roulette. No. Never.
There's this one scene where Allison and Gib have had a big argument, and she jumps into a van. He tells her not to go. Gib jumps into the back of the truck, and Allison is kind of accosted by the gentleman driving the car. And then Gib jumps into the front of the car and like acts like a crazy person.
Yeah,
it's a really great scene, and it's
and
like
he saves her.
I'm talking about a total maniac. Like it's really fantastic.
They try very hard to lighten it because it's very dark that basically she's been picked up by a guy who picks up pretty girl hitchhikers and rapes them. That's a dark way to go. But then it's very quickly counterbalanced by the fact that Gib pops up in the back of the truck and is looking in the window, which is a very funny moment because you're like, oh man, he's back there. And then he pops into they pull off by the side of the road and he pops into the door. And the guy claims that Allison is his wife. And so Jock is like, oh, your wife. And he goes like a crazy person and he says, I'm just going to go out. I'm going to take your wife with me. Yeah. And he pulls her out and pulls the stuff out of the back as the guy speeds off, and it's a nice moment, I guess, where she is willing to forgive some things about him because, you know, he was looking out for her.
It's kind of interesting to me how this movie at this point becomes like a buddy cop movie, like,
yeah,
which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Right?
This is this is the moment where the movie flips over into brilliant. Is like, we've set for half an hour, we've sort of set up that they're in opposition. Really, the pitch of this movie is these two people who don't like each other but actually are going to fall in love are forced to hitchhike across the country when, you know, and this is where it starts. It's right here.
Yeah, because it becomes one of those scenarios where, like, they grow to love each other and they're pushed apart. Like, it becomes that, which I wasn't expecting this movie to be at all. I really love it when... So they're going to get a bus together, right? They end up hitchhiking to a bus station, and they're about to get a bus and have their first real heartwarming moment where Allison gives Gibb the money to get a bus ticket, but she's going to go earlier than him. So she leaves to get the bus. He sits down and starts watching TV. They quickly just do a quick cut of a camera angle, and Allison has gotten off the bus and she's just standing over him watching the TV with him. I really like that moment. That was really nice.
Yeah, she doesn't give him the money yet. She offers to give him the money later, but he doesn't have the money at that point.
I thought she gave him the money at that point.
No. Oh, she offers to give him like $50 or something like that of her $70, but he refuses, and he's basically going to just sort of sit there at the bus station, I think is how it is. But she can't. This is her opportunity to not leave him behind, so she doesn't leave him behind.
Okay.
And they're gonna go on and, you know, go on together and hitchhike the rest of the way.
So then they kind of like they're going from place to place, like they're growing closer together, right? During this period of time, they're warming up to each other, even to the point where like Gibb gets angry that Allison is on the phone to her boyfriend, right?
Yeah,
and he goes out and gets drunk.
He goes out and gets drunk, yeah, in a bar because they were making that connection, but she's still talking to the boyfriend.
And he comes back and he's super drunk, but she like tucks him in at night and that sort of stuff. It's kind of cute. And then the next day, like he's rushing her to leave, and she leaves this schedule book that she has, which has all of her money in it, and she's planned out this whole trip for them. She leaves it in the hotel. They go on a few different hitchhiking adventures before they realize that the book has actually been lost. And then it starts to rain. And it starts to rain. But the way that they do the schedule book being lost is fantastic. She's like, right, we can eat every 200 miles. So they go to a certain point. They go to a cafe. They're so excited to go in and eat. They're like talking about what they're going to order. They walk in, and the camera just stays on the door for a few seconds. And then they storm back out again. And Gibb's like, how could you lose your schedule book? And I really like that at this point, they've quickly assumed the stereotypical roles of a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cute. Then it starts to rain, and they start to like try and find a place. And then Allison remembers that she has a credit card that can only be used in emergencies. So then cut to this extremely lavish hotel that they're in with this beautiful meal that they're eating. They're drinking
wine. It's the only place that took credit cards.
Of course. They're eating veal and salmon. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of where the movie ends up for me like having more heart than I expected. Like there's this scene that evening where they're lying in bed together. Like usually it'd be one of them on the bed, one of them on the floor, but this is the first night that they're going to share a bed together. Like nothing's really going on.
Because she trusts him. She says, you know, this is unlike before. She's like, no, you can sleep on the bed too. It's fine. She's like, there's a level of trust that they have with each other having been through all of this. And in the morning, he wakes up and his arms kind of around her and he's super apologetic, like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that, I feel really bad. And so he's learned this, you know, he's trying to honor her choices and be a good guy and be a good friend. And her response is like, it's fine, right? Like she totally trusts him, it's fine. And they have built that connection now where it's the complete opposite of that first hotel room scene where he decides he's going to sleep on the bed and she just goes and sleeps on the floor
Gibb goes and stands out on the veranda to cool down, I assume. Like he's just like, I'm gonna go stand on the veranda, like, and he just goes out there and just stands there for a while. But it's really nice how they warm to each other in this way. But they end up getting to LA, so they get into this truck, and Allison is asleep, or at least they believe that she is asleep, and Gibb is talking to the truck driver and telling telling him about the sure thing, the reason that he's going to California. Because at this point, Gib is pretty convinced that he hasn't got a shot, right? Because Allison seems to still be hung up on her boyfriend.
Well, that conversation actually begins with the guy saying, you and your girlfriend, and he says, no, she's not my girlfriend. She's got a boyfriend in L.A. And the truck driver says something like, oh, that's a shame. And John Cusack like looks back and makes sure she's asleep, and he says, yeah, it is. And it's like, that's his moment of like revealing that he's written her off and is very sad about it, but she's got a boyfriend, and that's just how it is, and he's got to deal with it. And what happens next is that they're talking about the sure thing, and that's when she wakes up. Yep. So she doesn't hear him regret the fact that he can't be with her because she's got a boyfriend. All she hears is that he's going to go to Anthony Edwards' place and meet Nicolette Sheridan.
But the truck driver puts the foot down, right? He's like, you can't waste this opportunity. Like, he's got to get in there.
She's gonna be gone in a couple of days. It's like, all right, if you pay the speeding tickets, off they go with the truck through other parts of California that we're being shown.
And then it's really great. Like, they're in the same university, right? So
UCLA, apparently, yeah.
Allison is going to visit her boyfriend, who I think his name was Jason.
Yes, he's Jason, and he's really boring and likes tea.
Yep.
So he's the worst. The worst. And he wears glasses.
I just realized that.
He is the worst human being. And you find a Jason who went to college in Southern California, drinks tea, wears glasses, super boring.
Boring.
Dump him. Dump him, ladies. Yep. Dump him.
Why would anybody want to spend time with a guy like that?
Excuse me, I'm going to sip my tea now.
Yeah, please do. Their nights really diverge at this point. Like, Allison is like super bored now of her boyfriend and everything about him. She like is...
They're playing cards.
Yeah.
She wants to shotgun a beer because Kib taught her that. And he wants to make tea and play cards. And when she says, let's do something exciting, he says, how about I spot you 50 points at cards? So it's insulting because he's saying she's not very good at it. And still really boring.
Mm-hmm. And then Gib is off at a party, right, where he meets the sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then Allison sees the party, and she wants to go to a party too. So she kind of arrives with her boyfriend, and at this point, Gib isn't sure if he wants to go through with the sure thing because he's in love with Allison. But when he sees them two coming together, he's like, screw it. And there's this whole scene where they're like both as couples dancing near each other. And then it comes out that... Gib is actually a virgin, even though he had claims of sexual prowess, but it seemed like that has not been the case.
I'm not clear on if that's actually the case, because they say in the first scene in the movie he talks about having sex a few times.
I think he might. I think that was bravado.
Yeah, but I think it's possible, though, that because the implication is that Anthony Edwards has also downplayed him to the sure thing to make her, I guess, seem more charitable toward him. It's, you know, the sexual politics of a teen sex movie from the 80s are questionable at best. But I think that's because Edwards also suggests that he might be gay. So that's in the mix here, too, which is not, you know, it's not the best. But the idea is, regardless, Gib feels insulted by Anthony Edwards. And then it also, there's a breakdown between Allison and Jason because she is way too familiar with Gib, and he is not aware of the fact that they've been traveling together and sleeping in the same motel rooms all of those things. And so he's like, how do you know this? How does he know what you look like in the morning? And, you know, all of these things, right? So everything is kind of falling apart.
She's like complaining to her boyfriend about how much this boy annoys her. It's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of cuts to back at university, right? They're back at school.
So the last scene in LA is he takes Nicolette Sheridan, the sure thing, to the bedroom. And they're talking. And earlier, I should say, he has a series of dream sequences with Nicolette Sheridan that are kind of amusing. Where there's a really great one where she is sitting by the side of the pool, basically begging him to have more sex with her, and he's sitting in this pool chair floating around and saying, "No, you know, I'm tired," and all of that. It's staged very amusingly. And then there are several of those, which are very, you know, teen boy fantasy kind of scenarios. And then the last one, he has that same kind of scenario, and it's Allison, right? So that's that moment of like, oh, he's really got now. So here, he goes up with her like, this is the time he's finally going to be able to do it with the sure thing. And we cut away. and we don't really see a realization of what exactly happens there, other than that we know that he is he's thinking about Allison. And we cut back to college after winter break.
And Gibb has written a paper that the lecturer starts to read aloud.
Yes, our Swedish lecturer, yes.
And it's called The Sure Thing, and it explains the whole story up to the point where he says that he couldn't go through with it because the Sure Thing wanted Gibb to say to her that he loved her, and he couldn't do that because now he knew what love was.
The answer was no.
Boom, boom.
And at that moment, she's looking back. Allison is looking back at him, and he's looking at her, and she realizes that that he didn't go upstairs and have sex with the Sure Thing because he's in love with her. And this is the way he chose to express it, is several weeks later in an essay in the middle of class being read by the Swedish lady.
The only way to express true love, Jason.
As you do.
So I really like this movie. The problem,
good,
my problem with this movie is I'd seen Say Anything.
Yeah, you know? Well, it's funny too, because he's like kind of a proto. He's more intelligent than the guy in Say Anything, I think, because in some ways, because he does go off to like an Ivy League college instead of sort of staying home and trying not to join the army. But he is a similar kind of character, and Allison is very much like the lead in the female lead in Say Anything, right? They're similar. I would say we haven't done When Harry Met Sally yet, have we?
No.
Have you seen that movie?
No.
Okay, maybe we'll do that. That's another Rob Reiner movie with Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal, and there is in the beginning of that movie there's a drive from Chicago to New York that they take that. Also, I feel like is very similar, and their relationship is very similar to the relationship in this movie. So you saw them out of order. I feel like this is like a proto movie of other movies. Like it leads to Say Anything, and it leads to When Harry Met Sally. But it is not, and it leads to High Fidelity maybe in some ways. I don't know. But it is earlier, right? So it's not quite as fully formed. Say Anything kind of picks up after 2 minutes, and here I feel like it takes 25 minutes of setup before the movie really starts to crank, and the first 25 minutes is not particularly warm or likable because it's about freshmen in college who are on the make, and it's just kind of like that stuff really doesn't interest me, and then it really kicks into gear, and then the last hour of it is spectacular. But you're right, it is like a lot of these other movies, and Cusack is a lot like he is in Say Anything, and that it is a similar kind of mismatch relationship.
And it's just because I loved that movie so much.
That's a better movie than this movie.
Yeah, but I did really enjoy this movie. I also liked that it was like 100 minutes. That felt right.
Yeah.
A lot of the movies that we've been watching are 2 hours more.
So many 2 hour long movies that are made these days, and this is 95, and it's tight and bright, as they say. It is a solid, it sort of sweeps you along. I like it a lot. I have not seen this one in a very long time, and I remember liking it. And as I started to watch it, I thought, oh no, what if my memory is faulty and it's not that good? But then, like I said, 20 minutes in or somewhere, I'm like, this is really great. And I will say, my experience, actually, I part of the reason I love this movie is that it's got some resonance for me, and it's not because there's that boring Jason who drinks tea. It's because my relationship, so I met my wife in college, and I had a girlfriend and she had a boyfriend, and I see us in this movie in the sense that these two characters make a connection, but they are not capable, and it's one-sided in the case of this, well, unless you consider the Sure Thing, the thing that's pulling him, but that she's an illusion. I actually really like that although she does exist, it is a stand-in for kind of a male fantasy of a woman as opposed to a real woman. And that's what this movie is about, is that he falls in love with a real woman. Mm-hmm. And the fantasy is not going to measure up to reality. The reality is better. She's a real woman and he loves her, and that is the most important thing, right? And it just, but I have that mirror because that was exactly the same situation my wife and I were in college, where we were dating other people and we formed a really tight connection, and there was definitely a moment where where she broke up. I heard that she had broken up with her boyfriend right after I graduated from college. And it was exactly like the moment in the movie where he says, "You broke up with him?" I was like, oh, what a relief. Well, now there's nothing stopping us from getting together. And that is how this movie ends. So that's great, too. But I do like that overarching message that we, for all of the stuff at the beginning that's kind of gross, especially, I think, 30 years later, about things you say to get women to go out with you and to get women to sleep with you. In the end, what's the core message of this movie? That the sure thing is not what he wants. That she's a fantasy. And that Allison is who he wants, and she's a real person, and she's not perfect for him in the sense that she does all sorts of things that he doesn't like, and he does all sorts of things that she doesn't like. But in the end, that is that they're the ones who should be together. Aww.
I like these movies of like the heartwarming love story. I'm a sucker for it, and this one ticks those boxes, so recommend it. Yeah. Another great Mike at the Movies pick, Jason. You're doing very well.
Thank you. This is I'm happy we could combine Rob Reiner and John Cusack. This is where they come together. So now the paths will diverge again, but we got it. We got them together right here.
This series is all about Cusack for me. Got to say, we got to go for High Fidelity soon, I think.
Yeah, it's in the 90s, but or maybe even 2000. But it may be we may have to go there. We may have to take a time machine forward to there.